All happy families resemble one another. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. In the book that these words are taken from, some of you might be familiar with, the book that these words are taken from is all about the many ways families make themselves unhappy. This sermon instead will be about the one way, the only way, that a family can make itself happy. That is by imitating the Holy Family, whose feast we celebrate today. To that end, we'll look at today, we'll look at the family and the teachings of the vicars of Christ, the popes, starting with Pope Francis, our present pontiff, going back to his predecessor, Pope Pius XI and Leo XIII. We'll intersperse this meditation with some commentary of my own, teachings from the Catechism, and then we'll conclude with a reflection, and hopefully there will be food for thought for everybody. For those of you who already are in families, are living in families, for those of you who will have families in the future, for those of you who can learn directly, for those of you who might be able to help relatives, friends, who live in families and maybe need to hear a word of consolation, a word of comfort, a word of truth, too, about the family and the design and the plan of God. Let's begin with Pope Francis. A week before Christmas, on December 17th, he gave an audience, the first of a series of audiences dedicated to the family, the Christian family. I quote, "Christmas casts a great light on this mystery of the family," the Pope says. "The incarnation of the Son of God opens a new beginning in the universal history of man and woman. And this new beginning happens within a family, in Nazareth. Jesus was born in a family," the Holy Father says. "He could have come in a spectacular way, or as a warrior, or as an emperor. No, he is born in a family. This is important, to perceive in the Nativity this beautiful scene. God chose to come into the world in a human family, which he himself formed." End quote. How important, this is important, the Holy Father says, and how important it is, this first point that the Holy Father makes. God entered the world in a human family, by his own free choice, a family which he himself formed. What is this family? What's the makeup of this family that our Lord has formed for himself and for us? It's a family based on the matrimonial bond of one man and one woman. One man, one woman, united in matrimony and blessed by the Lord with their offspring. The family God has formed for himself and for us. This is not a merely human teaching. It's not something that the church has invented. Words of our Lord, words to remember. Matthew 19, 4-6, when the Pharisees accuse our Lord, they want to make him trip up. They want to find a motive for accusing our Lord. They ask him about divorce. And our Lord responds with an uppercut, and he says to the Pharisees, "Have you not read that from the beginning the Creator made the male and female, and said, 'For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh, so they are no longer two but one flesh. Therefore what God has joined together, no human being must separate.'" What God has joined together, no human being can ever separate. Words to remember. And words to remember also from the Catechism. The Catechism teaches that concubinage, rejection of marriage as such, inability to make long-term commitments, trial marriages, so-called trial marriages, all these situations offend against the dignity of marriage. They destroy the very idea of the family. They weaken the sense of fidelity in parents and in children. From generation to generation, this infidelity, this weakness is propagated. They are contrary to the moral law. The sexual act must take place exclusively within marriage. Outside of marriage, it always constitutes a grave sin and excludes one from sacramental communion. Catechism number 2390. Words to remember, to have engraved on our consciences, especially whenever this coming year, you'll hear confusing pastoral solutions offered to families that are so-called fragile and wounded families. When you hear any confusing solutions offered to such families, remember this teaching of the church: marital relations between two persons who are not husband and wife, whether because they are not married to each other, or because they are married but not to each other, or because they are of the same gender and therefore by natural law cannot be married, such intimate relations are always a grave sin and destroy the very idea of the family. When you hear confusing ideas floating around out there, ask yourself this question. Does it pass this test? Conjugal relations between two persons who are not husband and wife are always sinful. If it doesn't pass that test, it's not from God. Summarizing the first point then, marriage is an institution created by God, willed by God. Its nature, its purpose, its laws come from God, and it is the duty of the church and of the state to recognize it, to protect it. To recognize it and to protect it, not to redefine it, not to change it. Let's go back to Pope Francis. He says, he goes on in his audience, Jesus dwelt in Nazareth, that periphery of the Roman Empire, for 30 years. The evangelist Luke summarizes this period like this, Jesus was obedient to them, that is to Mary and Joseph, end quote. Second point, obedience. Obedience in the family is essential. Obedience in the family is essential, and it is not a form of domination. We hate obedience sometimes, especially in our day and age when we're taught a false liberty. We look at obedience as a form of domination, which it is not. It's not an exercise of strength. There was no violence in a holy family, only love. Mary lovingly obeyed Joseph, and Jesus lovingly obeyed both his parents. Our Lord did not obey Mary and Joseph. Why? Because they were stronger than him and were able to restrict his liberty. No, he was omnipotent God, even when he was still a child in a holy family. He obeyed them because it is a God-given duty of children to be obedient to their parents. Our Lady obeyed Saint Joseph, not because he was stronger, not because he had a stronger will, was able to flex his muscles and impose himself on her. No, it was actually the other way around. Our Lady had a much stronger will than Saint Joseph. She obeyed because it is the God-given duty of a wife to be obedient to her husband. Pope Pius XI teaches on this point in his encyclical Casti Connubii. In the family, there's an order of love, he says. There's a right way to love one another in the family, a hierarchy, we could say. What is this order of love? This order includes both the primacy of the husband with regard to the wife and children, and the ready subjection of the wife and her willing obedience, which the apostle commends in these words. The apostle St. Paul speaks, "Let women be subject to their husbands as to the Lord, because the husband is the head of the wife, and Christ, as Christ, is the head of the church." This subjection of wives, however, does not deny or take away the liberty which fully belongs to the woman, both in view of her dignity as a human person and in view of her most notable office as wife and mother and companion. Nor does it bid her to obey her husband's every request, if not in harmony with right reason or with the dignity due to her as wife. Wife has to obey in everything that's not sinful. Husband cannot command his wife something that is sinful. This order of love, moreover, forbids that in this body, which is the family, the heart be separated from the head, to the great detriment of the whole body and the proximate danger of ruin. What does this mean? This order of love forbids that the heart be separated from the head. For if the man is the head, the Pope says, the woman is the heart. And as he occupies the chief place in ruling, so she may and ought to claim for herself the chief place in love. How much chaos in families where this is not obeyed, where the wife, the heart of the family, does not want to obey the head. How much chaos and sadness in families where this order of love is not respected. For if the man is the head, the woman is the heart. He occupies the chief place in ruling, but she must occupy the chief place in love. And if mothers want their children to be obedient to them, what do they have to do? They have to give the example of obedience to their husbands. And husbands are not off the hook either. They, as representatives of Christ in the family, they have to love their wives as Christ loves the church. How does Christ love the church? Unto sacrifice. He dies for the church. He sacrifices himself for the church. He doesn't lord it over and extort obedience from the church. He loves it as his own body. He gives his life for the church. Let's go back then to Pope Francis. He goes on, in Nazareth, everything seemed to happen normally, and it did, according to the customs of a pious and hardworking Israelite family. They worked. The mother cooked. She did all the housework, all the things that mothers do. The father, a carpenter, worked, taught his son the trade. 30 years, because God works in mysterious ways. What was important there was the family, the Holy Father says.
And this was not a waste. 30 years of fidelity in a family is not a waste. There were great saints, Mary, the Most Holy Woman, Immaculate, and Saint Joseph, a most righteous man, the family, end quote. So the third point, the necessity of sanctification of everyday tasks and duties. The family is not just a place where a man and woman get together to satisfy their natural cravings, to have kids, to feed them, to give them shelter, to rear them until they're independent and let them go. No, the family is much more than that. It's a place where we're called to holiness, the holiness of spouses, the holiness of children, who are supposed to be formed to be good citizens of the earthly kingdom and of the heavenly kingdom in the future. Christian families are called to holiness of life. The duties of parents, how do we arrive at that holiness? By obeying, by fulfilling the duties that are intrinsic in the family. Duties of parents. Parents have the right and the duty to be open to life. That is why contraception is a sin and why large families are a blessing. And a lot of young parents today, a lot of young couples would like to have numerous large families, lots of kids, but they run into difficulties where? From doctors, often atheist doctors who don't offer the help they should. From friends who are imbued with a secular, atheistic way of thinking, far from the gospel. But most sadly, from their own families, from their own parents, from in-laws. From their own parents or in-laws who do everything in word and action to show how they disapprove of their irresponsible projects to have more than the two standard kids. All the nagging, how much they nag. Nagging the young couples with everything possible, from what will the neighbors think, to you can't afford it and I won't help you afford it, to about, you know, to stories about being responsible. How sad this is when in families themselves there's no support when young couples seek that blessing of a large family. Parents have the right and duty to be open to life. Large families are a blessing. Young couples should find support in their family in seeking that blessing and in accepting that blessing. The fecundity, being open to life, cannot be reduced, however, to the sole procreation. The parents have to educate their children. The role of parents in education is of such importance that it is almost impossible to provide an adequate substitute, the Catechism says, number 2221. This formation, this help, is not only with homework, and that's it, but also the transmission of the faith, helping children to make right moral choices, correct moral choices. All children should learn from their parents what's good and what's bad. This lesson to them, however, will never be credible unless they see their parents choosing what is good and avoiding what is bad. Children should learn from their parents how to pray at home and at church. They'll never learn this lesson. They never see their parents pray. Parents never take them to church, or at most, drop them off. And after a first communion or confirmation, everybody abandons the faith. What kind of a lesson will that be? And when parents neglect these duties, godparents, grandparents, aunts, and uncles have to step up to the plate and try to fill in for the neglect of the parents as much as they can in word and in example when parents neglect their duties. Duties of children. How do children become holy in a family? As long as a child lives at home, it has to be obedient to the parents. In everything that's not sinful, a child has to obey. And parents have no right, by the way, in parentheses, to forbid a child to seek a religious vocation or a priestly vocation. It would be a mortal sin on their part to impede their children from pursuing a religious vocation. The Catechism says, obedience towards parents on the part of children ceases with the emancipation of the children. Once they're of age and they leave home, they no longer have to be obedient to the rules of the household which they've left, but respect never ceases. The fourth commandment reminds grown children of their responsibilities towards their parents. As much as they can, they must give them material and moral support in old age, in times of illness, and in times of distress and loneliness. And children have to learn this from their parents too. Are you hoping that your children will take care of you when you're old? What example do you give them? If all children remember from their childhood is how their parents used to fight with grandma and grandpa, well, that's what they will learn to do. If the only memories children have of their grandparents from their childhood is just visiting them once a year in a nursing home, that's how they will learn to treat their own parents. How important it is to form children in a family unto Christian virtue. It is of such importance that this role, if it is neglected, can only by a miracle, a moral miracle of God, so to speak, be made up by others. Pope Francis says, he goes on, each Christian family can, first of all, as Mary and Joseph did, welcome Jesus, listen to him, speak with him, guard him, protect him, grow with him. Let us make room in our heart and in our day for the Lord, as Mary and Joseph also did. And it was not easy for them. How many difficulties they had to overcome. The flight into Egypt, that was no fun. Who'd like to do that nowadays? It was no fun. A lot of difficulties, but they were not an artificial family. They were not an unreal family, the Holy Father says. They had difficulties to overcome, but they were not an unreal family, not an artificial family. Two spouses united in matrimony for life, open to life, who accept the blessing of offspring, who raise their children in a Christian manner, this is not something unrealistic, neither 2,000 years ago nor today. The family of Nazareth urges us to rediscover the vocation and mission of the family, of every family, and what happened in those 30 years in Nazareth can thus happen to us too. What happened in those 30 years in Nazareth can happen to us too. How? Leo XIII, let's close with him. He says, to sum up everything, all this teaching in just a few words, the trials, religion, the virtue of religion would enable families, if they look to religion as their support, as their strength, the virtue of religion would enable them to bear tranquilly and even gladly the trials of their state of life, such as, for instance, the faults that they discover in one another, and inevitably they'll discover faults in one another, the differences of temper and character, the weight of a mother's cares, the wearing anxiety about the education of children, reverses of fortune, sorrows of life. We can be sure that in the Holy Family, religion was at the center, was the strength of the Holy Family. That's why the same Holy Father says, indeed, among Christian families, nothing more salutary nor efficacious can be imagined than the example of the Holy Family, where are to be found all domestic virtues in perfection and completeness. So far for the teachings of the Holy Fathers. Quickly, let's now end with a reflection. To summarize everything and to conclude, St. Thérèse of the Child Jesus, she is a doctor of the church, died at the age of 24. She was a Carmelite nun. She was well-loved by her fellow sisters, well-loved in a family. It's in a family that she learned the holiness, her path to holiness, which she then taught to the entire church. And in a reflection of hers, she says briefly, reflecting on the Psalms, David had good reason to sing, behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. But this unity, she says, is not possible on earth without sacrifice. How pleasant and how good it is for brethren to live together in unity, but this unity is impossible on earth without sacrifice. Christian families are called to imitate the Holy Family, but this is not possible without making sacrifices. Family life is not about domination, or who has the stronger will, or the last word, was able to impose himself on others and get his way. It's about loving, sacrificial obedience. The father must do all that is in his power to be a figure of Christ in the family, to ensure that the laws of God are obeyed in the household, and you must do this by word and first and foremost by example. The wife must obey her husband, children must obey their parents out of love, and all this entails sacrifice, it entails religion, it entails the cross of Christ. There are many, many ways, today more than ever, many ways to make a family unhappy. There's many ways as there are unhappy families. There's only one way to make a family happy. That is by making it a holy family, by making it a family according to the family of Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Praise be Jesus and Mary.